everyone, to the F-Ball NFL Podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Hengst, AFC North lead writer at BleacherReport.com and Pro Football Focus fantasy football contributor. I'm joined by my co-host, Brian.
Hello.
It's week 14.
It is.
Already.
Yes.
It is upon us. Week 14 in the National Football League. Teams starting to separate themselves out into playoff contenders, except that's a little bit more murky in the AFC, which we'll get into in just a little bit.
Fantasy playoffs starting this week.
Fantasy playoffs are starting this week.
So good luck to everybody out there that's in the playoffs.
I'm out of the playoffs in my redraft league, but we our dynasty team is alive in our other league, so hopefully we can pull out a win.
Wish us luck.
Yes.
Because we're going to need it, because this guy is loaded.
So first things first, obviously we all know that I'm the AFC North lead writer at Bleacher Report. And so we often have an AFC North kind of slant to what we discuss sometimes here on the podcast.
Or at least it might seem as such.
And that might frustrate some, might entertain others. Regardless, there is major news in the AFC North to discuss this week, and that is a couple of days of quarterback controversy for the Cleveland Browns. The Browns benched, or rather Mike Pettine, head coach Mike Pettine, along with the coaching staff, chose to bench Brian Hoyer late in his team's 26-10 loss to the Buffalo Bills on Sunday. Hoyer had thrown zero touchdowns and two interceptions and was wildly inaccurate, so they brought in Johnny Manziel. He did lead the team to a scoring drive, which was capped off by a 10-yard touchdown run by none other than Mr. Manziel.
Mm-hmm.
He also had that horrible fumble situation that was called back because they said it was a forward pass.
No, but I
don't know about that. Mike Pettine said after the game that they brought Johnny in because they wanted to provide a spark to an offense that's been mostly listless for the past three games. Brian Hoyer's been pretty poor in those three games, one touchdown thrown to six interceptions. They did win one of those three games, that Atlanta Falcons game that ended on a Hoyer-led game-winning drive that ended with a Billy Cundiff field goal. But before that drive, Hoyer not playing very well. He did say he was going to evaluate the quarterback position, that it's something that they had been discussing a little bit in the recent weeks because Hoyer struggled, that they would have a definitive answer on who would start on Sunday against the Indianapolis Colts on Wednesday. And indeed, that decision did come down today. And the Browns have chosen to stick with Brian Hoyer as the starter, citing the fact that he's had most experience with the first team. He has the most experience with this offense, that Manziel's not entirely ready yet, that the risk-reward didn't really seem to pay off just now by putting Manziel in, and especially because the Browns are 7-5 and are in the playoff picture. Of course, you could look at it the other way and say, well, those two losses in the last three games were pretty much Hoyer-related, and that the Browns right now could be 9-3 and in sole control of the AFC North if it weren't for Hoyer's poor performance. I personally support Hoyer getting another week. Obviously, his leash is significantly shorter. They've already shown a willingness to pull him and put him on the bench. But you kind of dance with the guy who brought you to the dance. There have been good games for Brian Hoyer. He has been inconsistent. His accuracy is not where anybody would like it to be. But regardless, this is a better quarterback situation than the Browns have been in a long time. Even if they end the season, win one more games and end 8-8, they've doubled their win total from a year prior. And of course, they have to spend this season kind of evaluating what they have in Brian Hoyer, because he is an unrestricted free agent after this season, and they were going to have to make a decision about the quarterback regardless. Some people are pretty upset about this. Saw what Manziel brought to the table in that drive. Had some serious velocity on the football, which is interesting. You see the scale. Like, there's Whedon last year, and then Hoyer came in, and it just, the velocity was off the chains. And then Jason Campbell was in there, and he was somewhere in between Hoyer and Whedon, then Hoyer, and then it went back to Whedon. And now it's like, and then you've got the next level of velocity on the arm with Johnny Manziel. But I do support it. I think that the Browns have gotten away from the offensive strategy that had brought them a lot of success earlier in the season, running the ball heavily, a lot of play action, Hoyer connecting on the deep pass. Obviously, the play action, the running the ball, those kinds of things aren't really useful. You can't really use them against the Buffalo Bills defense because they don't give up rushing yards. That's just how they're built. But the other thing, too, is the return of Josh Gordon. And I seem to think that that's been a contributing factor these last 2 weeks to Hoyer struggling throwing the ball.
Mm-hmm.
He's targeted Josh Gordon 29 times in 2 games. I think that's ill-advised for any quarterback to be targeting any receiver 29 times in 2 games.
I mean, unless they're not covering him.
Unless they're not covering him. And then it makes sense. But obviously it's Josh Gordon. He's going to be everybody's primary concern on defense in terms of coverage.
Well, plus, if that's all he's the only guy he's targeting, then the defenses are going to know to cover him. So.
Right. It's predictable. It becomes a one-dimensional offense. You know, he was forcing the ball so much to Josh Gordon, but yet he was converting first downs with Miles Austin, who was just placed on injured reserve with a lacerated kidney. So obviously, you know, either, you know, getting Andrew Hawkins back involved with the passing offense, they should be getting Jordan Cameron, the tight end, back this week, maybe. Taylor Gabriel will have to step up. Josh Gordon is going to have to get his route running together. I mean, there were some timing issues between Hoyer and Gordon. That's to be expected because he missed 11 games. But I get it. There's upside to Johnny Manziel, but how high that upside is with 4 games remaining in this season, I'm not so sure, and so I support the decision. I'm curious what you think, Brian, about the Browns' decision-making process, you know, dating back to benching Hoyer on Sunday.
We've seen very little of Manziel this year. And,
yeah, he played like about 5 snaps, I believe, before Sunday.
Before Sunday, mm-hmm. Right. And it was just like a throw him in for one play sort of thing, and maybe like a gimmick or see if we can catch him.
Right, the Manziel package.
Right, that sort of thing. So he's obviously light on experience, which Hoyer was coming into this season, you know, or he was around the league for a long time, but he hadn't had a lot of starting experience. Manziel's obviously got less of both, and, you know, I don't know. This entire outrage about, you know, anybody that over the last couple of days, everybody I've been reading about, there's a few people that are saying maybe you should still stick with Hoyer, but everybody's saying, you know, it's Manziel's time.
Right,
and all
because
this.
You know, we know what we have in Hoyer. Hoyer is mediocre at best. Okay, that's not good enough. Move on.
I'm trying to think of a parallel for a team that's in playoff contention, and the only one that comes to mind is San Francisco a few years ago when Alex Smith was there and Kaepernick was a second-year guy.
Right.
And Smith was
playing well.
Smith was playing pretty well. Right, but that's the thing is that there was a reason that he was forced out and that Kaepernick came in, and then he played really well, and so then it was kind of a tough decision after that. But I think they even went back to Alex Smith after that or for a few games. No?
No, Kaepernick won that job.
He won that job outright at that time.
So
I knew he did the following year. I couldn't remember how it happened.
No, Alex Smith came back healthy, and he was the number two quarterback because they liked the multidimensional Kaepernick.
That's as close a comparison as we're going to find.
Sure.
And one, I think that's a more complete team. That Niners team,
sure,
that year,
absolutely,
because I think that there's a lot that goes well for the Browns defense, but I still don't think it's as dominant as that.
Well,
that
they're
Niners
getting there. This is their first year with
exactly.
his system.
No, I'm not making any other comparisons there.
Sure.
Just looking strictly at what we've saw, or at what we saw out of both of these situations. And it's a different team because, you know, Niners are historically successful and
sure.
the Browns are historically not.
Right.
The Browns, this is the thing that's killing me is that if we would have been telling people, you know, 8 months ago that there'd be this quarterback controversy at the beginning of December for the Browns team that are in playoff contention. Like, nobody would have believed any of that.
Right. They would be like, well, if there's a quarterback controversy, but they're in playoff contention, then what's the controversy?
Right. How does that happen? Because
right.
Brian Hoyer has brought more success to this organization than they've had since it was
since 2007 with Derek Anderson. because they won 10 games in 2007 okay. with Derek Anderson.
All right, yeah, I forgot about that. So, or that was, wasn't that Brady Quinn's year or no?
No, 2007 okay. with Derek Anderson.
Anyway, it's mainly just that, you know, the fact that this is the second most successful team since they returned to the league in 99.
Yes.
They've had a surprising year where they've won more games than anybody's expected. And Brian Hoyer has been a huge part of that.
Right.
Because he's been a huge part of what has been bad about the Browns this year,
sure,
too. And that's
sure.
really what is so head-scratching and probably frustrating for Browns fans.
It's like Andy Dalton almost. I mean, but he's under a different microscope mm-hmm. because there's a different set of standards that he's being held to because, A, it's a Browns quarterback and they're just trying to find something that works, and, B, you've got Manziel, you know, mm-hmm. on his heels as compared to A.J. McCarron,
right.
you know, with Andy Dalton.
Right, they certainly did. The Bengals certainly didn't draft McCarron in the 20s in the first round this year.
Right,
and also even beyond the fact that he was drafted so high, he's this name, this electrifying figure, you know,
this
polarizing figure,
yes.
if you will. I don't know. I didn't see enough out of one drive. I thought it looked good. I thought that he provided a spark and the whole, and even the offense in general responded. Without going back and looking at it, I feel like half or more than half of the plays were just bootlegs. And,
yes.
you know, he just starts running around and then finds an open guy. And, you know, that's kind of what he does. That's kind of what he did at A&M. I'm not sure, you know, what he's going to end up being in the NFL, if he's going to be able to develop his game much beyond that, or whether he even needs to, I don't know. But I don't know. I think that he's got a future. I don't think this is the week that you put this guy, this kid in there when you've had this guy give you more success than you've had in a long time and did so by having lots of comebacks to where he's among the leader in quarterback, bringing their teams from behind late in the game.
Fourth quarter comebacks and game winning
yeah,
drives.
He's up there with Stafford and Romo as far as having the most fourth quarter comebacks, things like that, over the last few years, at least. I know there's a stat in there somewhere. I don't know what it is exactly.
Fourth quarter comebacks and game winning drives.
But I'm saying I don't know how far back those stats go. But regardless, Hoyer's shown enough this year. You are where you are because you're in playoff contention because of Hoyer.
Partially,
and
sure.
From the quarterback perspective, yes. Because Manziel didn't play but five snaps coming in before Sunday.
Correct, correct.
Now, what's hard is that over the last month, he's looked particularly bad, Hoyer has. And, you know, so I can understand this uneasiness, but I think you approach it the same way you did last week. You put him in. And if he's struggling that bad that it's really bringing down the whole team and it's just looking so listless, like you said, by the second half or whatever, I can understand making that move in this upcoming game, especially because they'll be at home against a much lesser defense in Indianapolis.
Yes.
On the road in Buffalo, having a hard time is not something that's a rare thing.
No, the Browns have just begun to sort of the Browns have just begun to understand how to win on the road this year. You know, that's not been the strength of the Browns for seasons and seasons and seasons now. This year is the first time they're actually winning some games on the road. So they're not going to win all of them on the road.
Of course not.
And especially when you have an offense that is run first, run heavy, the passing game is built off of the rushing offense, and then you play a rushing defense like the Bills, you're not gonna be able to run that offense, and I think that threw them off. I think Josh Gordon's presence, and I think Hoyer trying to force the ball to Josh Gordon hasn't done him any favors because he's not a pass first, pass heavy quarterback. That's not his
true
style.
It was also early in the game that they lost their center, who was already their replacement center.
Well, he's back. He's not.
I'm not
hurt.
Saying he's not
sure.
back for this week. I'm just saying like that's what happened that game.
Yes. Yes.
So they were struggling and. I feel like it's understandable. And yeah, they brought in Manziel and he zipped him down the field and charged in for, you know, a rushing score. And that was exciting to see. But, you know, I don't know, the very next drive he made just a god awful play that
a complete rookie mistake.
Yeah,
he made a huge rookie mistake.
And the refs, you know, didn't penalize him for it, basically, and you know made it into something that it wasn't, and so now everybody just like wants to, oh well whatever, it was one play, and you know they want to lean on the one drive rather than the one play, and I'm saying you got to look at both, and the fact that you're going to have ups and downs, you're going to have rookie mistakes from a rookie if you're starting him in high pressure situations, and so again Hoyer has had a cool head about him for the entirety of this season.
He's been very focused. He's been very confident in himself and in his ability to bounce back. And I get that people are getting kind of tired of that because week after week, Hoyer says, I'll bounce back, and he hasn't in the past couple of weeks. And it gets frustrating. I understand. I can understand why Browns fans are frustrated. This team is 7-5, but could be 9-3. And you can really point to the quarterback in both of those situations and say, see. But this team, you know, even if they end 8-8, even if they end 7-9, and they don't win any more games this season,
that's still seven wins.
It's still seven wins, and it's something to build off of, and it's a positive.
It's more than they've had in a long time, and it's a step. It's a step in a progression here, and they're not done with where they need to go. Just assuming that they finish 7-9, they're not done where they need to go, and they need to make another step next year.
But this is
but
a
they've at least
step.
Made that step to be they're relevant in December right now.
Yes.
I think just telling anybody that 8 months ago, people would have had a hard time believing it.
Sure.
And here we are. So, I think that his leash is shorter, certainly.
Oh yeah.
But I don't think you bail on him now.
No.
Let him show that he can't do it at home against a weaker defense, when the pressure is really on him, and if he's struggling as bad as he has been. Then you pull him.
Then you keep thinking about that decision.
You pull him and you put Johnny, and then you face this decision again next week. But no, you got to start with him and see what happens. And we'll see how he responds. I mean, hopefully he does finally play better. You know,
right? I mean, it boils down
in the
rounds. It boils down to what Hoyer said last week after the game. And kind of, you know, upsettedly and kind of defiantly. And it was echoed in what Mike Pettine said today. And that it's that Hoyer has proven capable of getting them these seven wins where they're at right now and getting them to seven wins. He's proven capable of getting this team into being playoff relevant right now with four games left to play. He has the experience. He's been working with the ones almost exclusively in practice. Johnny gets a few reps here and there with the ones, but he's pretty much exclusively with the ones. He's got the experience. He has proven that he can win games. It's just been a rough stretch these last 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And let's just see how he handles it this week.
I mean, he's looked like this all season. I mean, he's looked good and
he's got
really good and really terrible.
Wazoo, dude.
No, but it's more than that. I mean, I that's been the most baffling part about Brian Hoyer to me this season is that you go back and look at each game, and there's periods usually early where he's just struggling and he's having a hard time doing anything right.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's I don't know if something goes off, a switch is flipped, or you know whatever happens. Towards the end of the game, he's looked a lot better in almost every game. And now, granted, over the last couple weeks, it's gotten later and later in the game, and he still hasn't quite turned that corner. And the Falcons gave him a gift in Atlanta a couple weeks ago.
Oh, absolutely.
And he still made those huge throws in the biggest, most pressure-packed part of the game in the last drive to take him down, and so they could get out of there with the win. But he also got him in that situation in the first place by throwing those couple picks,
right.
One of which may or may not be his fault. But regardless, with this past week, you know, it was three quarters in a little bit into the fourth, I think, when they pulled him, right?
Mm-hmm.
That he looked lifeless. He looked completely
lost.
Just off. And it never came on. And so then they said, enough of this, we're pulling and putting in Johnny. And so, that's the thing. It's like there's been enough good out of him that makes me think that he can do it. But I that's the hard part and the really baffling part about him is why is there this inconsistent play within games that like this roller coaster ride of Hoyer?
Sure.
And I think that's the harder part to figure out, and if they can solve that, I think that they that there's a chance they could do some things this year. You put Johnny in, I think that it's too much for a kid that's too much of a risk taker anyway. There's going to be too many mistakes, and I think there's a lot better chance that they have worse fortune for the rest of the season if they just scrap Hoyer and go to Manziel full time for the rest of the year.
Sure. I mean, Hoyer's been struggling, but this is a team that's 7-5, and so you got to stick with that quarterback when you're still in the playoff race. Going to Johnny now says, okay, we're probably not going to go to the playoffs, and we're okay with that. And no team is going to do that. Because right now, here, let's segue. Because right now, the Browns are one of six teams in the AFC with a 7-5 record.
Wow.
12 of the 16 teams in the AFC have a 500 record or better. Miami, Buffalo, Baltimore, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, and Kansas City all sit at 7-5. The Indianapolis Colts and the San Diego Chargers are both 8-4. New England Patriots and Denver Broncos are 9-3. The Bengals are 8-3-1, and the Houston Texans are 6-6. And the Houston Texans aren't out of it either. They're going to be facing Baltimore later in the season here in the next couple weeks. And they've got Miami. Baltimore's got Miami this week. They've got Houston coming up.
So lots to get sorted out over the next few weeks.
So Baltimore and Cleveland are going to be facing off. Pittsburgh and Cincinnati face off twice in the final four games. Denver faces Cincinnati. You've got a lot of these teams. They're all going to be facing each other. A large chunk of them are going to be facing off in these last 4 weeks. It's a logjam in the AFC. So the Browns can't turn corner and find a different quarterback right now because they're in the hunt. And it's crazy to me. The next 4 weeks, because the NFC is a little bit more cut and dry right now. I mean, there could be some surprises still to come.
Sure.
But the AFC right now is just a logjam of teams vying for these playoff spots. And right now, the way it looks like it's going to be, there's going to be a significant number of teams with good records, with winning records, 10-6, maybe even an 11-5 team in this conference, depending on how things play out. That's on the outside looking in.
Yeah,
there's just so
be.
Many. There are only so many playoff spots to go around.
Well, it could be, and that's the thing, is a lot's going to get sorted out over the next 2 weeks, basically, and then there'll still be some races, obviously, going into the final.
Oh, week 17 final two, is six, all divisional.
16 and 17, sure, but like 14 and 15, we're going to get a lot of things shake out, and the whole idea of this is still killing me. It's we're talking about, there's all this discussion, we're spending all this time talking about this, that a team that is in the playoff hunt is talking about scrapping the veteran quarterback that they have and turning to the rookie with no experience.
Right.
When do you ever hear that?
No.
You put your rookie in if the season's lost and you want to get him some experience.
Yeah, you want to get him some reps
so that way
or something.
He's more ready to go next season.
Right.
Well, this is not that situation. And again, I'm not saying that Hoyer's played great here, because he certainly has. He's shown us that he's had issues at times.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just this whole idea of like, oh, well, let's put in the rookie we don't quite know enough about, and we'll probably act a lot like a rookie for most of the time that he's going to play.
Right.
And we'll see those rookie moments from him, you know, throughout games and things like that. You know, it baffles me that we're even having this conversation. But
it's just looking at this AFC potential playoff field, though. So, you know, at this point, the 9-3 New England Patriots, you could probably pencil them in. 9-3 Denver Broncos, you could maybe pencil them in, but San Diego's at 8-4 right now. So anything's possible there. The 6, 7, and 5 teams, Miami, Buffalo, Baltimore, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, and Kansas City, any of those guys, that could go either way for any of those six teams.
Yeah.
The 6-6 Houston Texans, as long as if they could have J.J. Watt carrying them through a win last week, they could carry them to the playoffs.
Right.
Cincinnati's at 8-3-1. They have a 1.5-game lead over the 7-5 teams that fill out the AFC North. But again, that's a game and a half lead, and they have two games against Pittsburgh coming up.
Mm-hmm.
You think maybe you could pencil in the Colts, but who knows what happens with Houston. So you look at all of these teams, and I look at them and I say, yeah, I mean, any one of these teams, it's going to be quite a dogfight these last 4 weeks to see, you know, how this shakes out, because obviously you're not going to have 12 AFC teams in the postseason. You're only
going to
have six. So.
Right. So, but yeah, you look at each division, the West is, obviously it's the Broncos division right now, but the
but
Chargers,
San Diego's creeping.
Chargers are banging on the door. Mm-hmm. The South, it's obviously Indy's division, but you know, Houston
still exists down there, man.
Houston still has J.J. Watt, which is really the only reason that they're even close to having being in contention here, and why they're even mentioned. But then the NFC North is just, God, who knows? Or AFC North is just, who knows what's going to happen.
That's
there.
That's a toss-up for me right now, absolutely.
I mean, they're all right there, and they're all jammed up. And, you know, AFC East, besides the Jets, I mean, the Bills are a pretty good team. I mean,
Buffalo 7-5, Miami 7-5. Yeah. I mean, they're Miami, in that wild card hunt.
Out of those two teams, I don't know who I think's better between Buffalo and Miami. They're both pretty solid. They're both have the ability to play pretty good D. I think Miami's probably a little bit more balanced.
And I like Miami's quarterback situation better. I like Tannehill.
I like Tannehill over Orton, at least certainly long term. For right now, yeah, I mean,
I like Tannehill over
Orton's
Kyle
got a little bit. Orton's got a little bit more experience, but Tannehill, you know, he's played really well this year, and definitely, you know, making the case to be the guy there for long term. So, and then obviously New England. So, yeah, it's quite a mess. I mean, you basically have, you know, Jacksonville and Tennessee, and Jacksonville's even been playing better lately. You know, Jacksonville and Tennessee and Oakland and the Jets, and everybody else is kind of like in it.
Everybody else is in it. And in fact, there are two AFC playoff scenarios that could clinch spots this week. The Colts could be AFC South champions if they win and Houston loses. And there's also two different scenarios involving, I think, four or five or six teams that if all these things come into place, then Denver can clinch in one of two complex scenarios that I'm not even going to go into. But it's possible that the Colts could actually win the AFC South if they win and Houston loses on Sunday.
Well, maybe the NFL will make a special exception this year and let an extra team in from the AFC, so that way the NFC South winner doesn't have to play.
Yeah. Put in some other AFC team instead of the NFC South winner. I've heard that suggestion a number of times, and I can't say that I'm against it. And while I'm not super excited about the fact that it looks like the NFL is interested in expanding to 8 playoff teams per conference next year, the way that this is going to play out in the AFC North is going to be a very strong argument as to why 8 playoff teams might actually be a smart expansion for next year.
Yeah, I mean, what's the talk is the 4 division winners and then four wild cards?
Yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, that would at least help dilute the fact that, you know, like in the NFC, the South winner, I don't know. We were... Rightfully so. We were really down on the NFC South last week, and you know, they did a couple surprising things.
Yeah, they got some wins last week.
Sure, and you know, New Orleans looks like they could, you know, make their case. I don't know if
throwing 5 touchdowns to 5 different receivers, albeit against that Steelers coverage unit, but still, five touchdowns to 5 different receivers. I mean, that's the Drew Brees we all know and love.
The Saints underperformed, I think, for most of the year, so that's why they could be a sneaky, decent team coming up.
Yes.
You know, and there was high expectations for them this year, and they certainly
I had
were
very high expectations.
Right,
for
and
them,
they certainly
speaking personally.
Besides you, I heard lots of people talk about it, and I thought that they were going to do a lot this year. I thought it was going to be a nice.
They were going to be desperate and backed up against the wall, and Drew Brees is getting older. Let's get him another Super Bowl ring. But I mean, that still could happen. I mean, if they win that division,
it's a
whole new season.
It still could. You never know.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, the it's like the a couple years ago. It was flip flop. It was the NFC West that was real bad, and none of their teams should be taken seriously. And the Seahawks got in with a 7-9 record. And the
they
Saints,
hosted a playoff
and then
game
they,
because
then they
of
had,
it.
Right, and they hosted that game, and the Saints were just – they were a wild card at the game – you know, the road team in that game. But they were like – they were murderers that year. They were really good that year.
Yeah, they got beast quaked on.
And then they got quaked on, exactly. And so, you know, it's hard – I've been saying this for a long time, and I try to keep tempered – emotions or thoughts about the league as the season goes on, and the reason I'm bringing this up is there's all this talk about this week, Packers and Patriots Super Bowl. Packers and Patriots Super Bowl.
Right.
Because both of them are playing really well right now. They had a great game on Sunday that obviously the Packers won. But they've both been on a tear for a while. And I'm not saying that I think that either of these teams won't make the playoffs or shouldn't by any stretch.
They both will make the playoffs.
I'm sure they will. And they both obviously could go to the Super Bowl, and the two of them certainly could face each other in February. But I'm just saying, like, when everybody's ready to anoint and it's still November or it's December 1 or something like that, or if you think back 6 weeks ago, there was all this talk about the Cowboys. Oh, man, the Cowboys, because the Cowboys were rolling at the time. Well, the thing I've been trying to keep remembering to my saying to myself, try to keep in perspective, is like that the whole idiom of I'd much rather be rolling in December than early October or September or something like that.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I think there's plenty of things that can happen between now and 4 weeks from now, and that can completely change everybody's mind about who they think might be going to the Super Bowl at that time when
right.
you get into the playoffs.
For
and,
sure.
Obviously, those two teams should still be in the picture, but I don't know. It's
expect the unexpected.
Yeah, somebody like the Saints could come out of nowhere,
sure.
and all of a sudden they just get back to playing like everybody expected them at the beginning of the season, or you know, everybody wants to talk about how bad a season Seattle's had, and you know, I still think that they're one of the best teams in the league, and they haven't played that dominant football week in, week out this year.
The Super Bowl hangover is real.
I understand the Super Bowl hangover is real. I'm just saying that that doesn't mean that they can't go back to the playoffs
I know.
They can't go back to the Super Bowl.
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying Super Bowl hangover is a real thing.
It sure is. But at this, like what I'm saying is if over the next couple of weeks they really get their team humming, you know what I mean, then everybody might be talking about them going back to the Super Bowl.
Right.
So, you know, we'll see in a few weeks.
And with that, we're going to take a quick break here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast, and we're going to be coming back with our Week 14 Minute Picks, so stay tuned. It's time for Minute Picks here at Week 14 at the F-Ball NFL Podcast. We will start, of course, with the Thursday night contest, the Dallas Cowboys at the Chicago Bears. Obviously, Chicago underperforming significantly this year. Dallas overperforming for the most part. You know, I do see scenarios in which Chicago can catch Dallas off guard. It's a Thursday game. It's at home. But both of these teams played on Thanksgiving, so they both have 7 days of rest, which is unusual for a Thursday night game,
mm-hmm.
Going from Thursday to Thursday. So they're both rested. So I don't feel like the travel and the home field kind of thing affects it as much as a typical Thursday game. So I'm going to go with Dallas just because they've, you know, exhibited more talent in more phases of the game more consistently this year than the Bears.
Yeah, true. They've compiled several games of a lot better play than we've seen out of the Bears, certainly. And also the Bears at home, you know, haven't really – it really hasn't meant much of anything for them
no,
to be at home.
No, not really.
I'll tell you what, though. I'm going to go with the Bears here. It's something about it's Thursday night, and I think that they're going to figure out how to get their playmakers to play well, make the plays, and the Cowboys, I think they're solid. They're a very good team. I think there's plenty going for them. I just like the Bears in this situation.
Heading to Sunday, AFC North action, Pittsburgh Steelers at the Cincinnati Bengals. The first time these two teams have met this season. I'm going with the Cincinnati Bengals. I look at what Drew Brees did last week to that Steelers secondary, that 35-32 loss by the Steelers, by the way, not as close of a game as it looks on paper. I look at that Steelers secondary just getting torched, and I feel like Andy Dalton can really come out and be good Andy. He's not going to have that stomach flu like he did last week. I think that Steelers secondary has really been exposed. Ike Taylor coming back hasn't been a help. I'm going with the Bengals.
This one's really hard for me. There's a historical precedent of
the Steelers winning in Cincinnati.
Steelers playing really well in Cincinnati. There's a historical precedent of Andy Dalton not playing well in big games, although this one's at least during the day. The historical precedent certainly of this season and probably going back the last couple of the Steelers, you know, just being in this off and on team and where they play down to their lesser opponents and they play up against their better opponents. So
sure.
This obviously would qualify as a better opponent. So it's like you got good and bad Dalton, you got good and bad whole Steelers team, and it's kind of hard to see to figure exactly what we're gonna see on Sunday. I'll go with the Bengals here, but I could easily see the Steelers winning.
St. Louis Rams at Washington. St. Louis, not great. Not as bad as they could be, though, especially with the quarterback situation kind of being shuffled around. Obviously, their run game had a nice boost last week. Washington, with the Colt McCoy under center thing, because he's got the best chance to help them out. I agree that I think Colt McCoy is their best option right now at quarterback. And I do acknowledge home field advantage on that, but that field's terrible, so who cares? I'm going with St. Louis.
Yeah, this is another one that's tough for me because I really like what St. Louis has turned into over the last few weeks. There has been some, obviously, the quarterback shuffling around. We saw last week Sean Hill, you know, take hold again of the firmly of the starter job there, although he only had it for a hot second earlier in the season. And their defense has been playing really well. But Washington's a sneaky good team. Their defense at times can play really well. And we saw with, you know, McCoy over the last couple weeks that he can make them look quasi-functional on offense. So, and they're at home. So, yeah, this is a really tough one. I think I like the Rams D a little better in this situation. So I'm going to go with them, but I'm certainly not sold because they don't play their best ball on the road. But
here's another tough one. New York Giants at the Tennessee Titans. New York Giants, of course, losing to the Jacksonville Jaguars last week, and easily one of the most depressing losses the Giants have had this year. They were, ahead 21-0 before losing that game.
Coughlin faces to beat all Coughlin faces.
So that's why I like the New York Giants to go to Tennessee and win here. But I'm going to give it one caveat, and that is if Eli Manning starts throwing picks and taking sacks, they're not going to be on the field enough to score any points, and I feel like that's always a threat, and I think that's a threat against this Tennessee defense. But I also like to think that they're going to bounce back. Last week was an embarrassment, I think a personal embarrassment for Tom Coughlin, and I think that they'll take that and travel well this week, probably.
Yeah, I don't know.
Picking a lot of road teams make me nervous.
I definitely can see what you're saying. Bounce back after a tough loss, and Coughlin like maybe really gets into him and sets him straight.
Yeah, but is this team already too far gone?
And I don't know if this team can respond to him like that. Regardless, so Titans, I'm not scared of, but at the same time, they can be sneaky good too, especially their defense.
They have some stuff on defense that they can do. They've got some pretty decent blitzing. They got ways that they could rattle Eli Manning, to be certain.
I'm gonna go with the Titans here, mainly because they're at home, and I just don't trust the Giants right now.
All right, next up, Carolina Panthers are at the New Orleans Saints. As we were saying, you know, the Saints are playing probably worse than they're capable of playing this season. They definitely looked pretty sharp last week against the Steelers. You know, Carolina's defense is in the same kind of situation as the Steelers in the sense that they have a bad secondary kind of cobbled together, and I think that that's going to be their undoing, especially going to that dome to play, and New Orleans finally kind of hitting a little bit of a stride. So I'm going to go with the Saints.
You know, one of the biggest stories, I think, of this NFL season that maybe is not even discussed that often is just what has happened to the Panthers defense.
Well, I'll tell you what happened. They completely lost their entire starting secondary. They can't generate a pass rush right now. They lost some guys there. Obviously, you know, Greg Hardy, he's not out there.
I know they've had some injuries. They've had
there's
a lot of factors.
Overall, if
we recall from last year, the Panthers were just this stifling defense, and it's just such a stark contrast to what we're seeing this year.
It's just gone.
And the offenses look dysfunctional at best, I'd say. The Saints, again, they've underperformed, but I think they've played a lot better football over the last month or so, and they're at home in this game. It's divisional. They can see the playoffs at this point, I think them and maybe the Falcons can get things turned around, though I don't think the Falcons are going to do it. So I think this is the Saints game to lose here. I think that they take this one.
Since we went over a little bit on a couple of these, let's just make this short and sweet. New York Jets at Minnesota Vikings. Nope, I'm sorry, Jets. It's not happening. Vikings all the way. Mike Zimmer versus Geno Smith. Enough said.
Yeah, the Vikings, they're a fun team to watch this year. They're, you know, not the most successful, but their defense has played really well at times. Zimmer's getting his thing going. You get to see the kid, Teddy Bridgewater. He's looked pretty okay, I'd say. Not great.
And I'm sure Rex Ryan's got some tricks up his sleeve
for
him.
Not great, but not as bad as some. So, yeah, I definitely like what Minnesota's got going, and the Jets have really nothing going in their favor right now.
So you're going with the Vikings?
Vikings, yes.
Next up, Baltimore Ravens at the Miami Dolphins. This game, to me, just screams Dolphins win. That defense flying under the radar for many people right now. Miami plays really well at home. They have certain plans for certain quarterbacks. Miami executed it really well against Andy Dalton in particular, and Flacco's got a lot of Dalton-esque traits to him in terms of him in the pocket and things like that. I think Miami is going to come away with a win. Also, Baltimore secondary, they're having problems. They got pretty shredded themselves last week. You put all those things together, and I think Miami gets this win.
Yeah, I think these two teams are trending, albeit slightly, but trending in opposite directions. That you kind of feel like the Ravens are falling off a little bit over the last few weeks.
It's that defense, the secondary in particular.
And then the Dolphins obviously have looked strong for most of the season, and they've played some of their best football as of late. So that combination, them being at home, The Ravens defense struggling, or at least lately have been struggling, and yeah, I think that's a recipe for the Dolphins.
Indianapolis Colts are at the Cleveland Browns. It marks the return of guys like DaQuell Jackson, Trent Richardson, and Josh Cribbs to their former team. I'm actually going with the Browns here, not because of some big bounce back for Brian Hoyer. I just think that they can employ that Patriots game plan where the Patriots ran for, 246 yards and just shut the Colts down because that offense couldn't even take the field. I think that if they can replicate that performance, I think they can get a win. I am concerned if Indianapolis has like a 2-touchdown lead early, then Hoyer's going to start forcing things, and then it's all over. But if Cleveland can establish the run and really pound the rock on Indianapolis, a la what the Patriots have done and what teams can do if they just dedicate to the run, I think that they can win. So I'm going to go with the Browns. But there's a lot of ifs.
Yeah, I'm. This one's tough for me. You know, I've been bullish on the Browns this year, mainly just because I talked to you too much, I think.
Probably.
but I do like a lot that's going on with the Browns team. The defense is looked better and better each week, I think.
Yeah, even without Tashaun Gibson, it's not the worst thing in the world.
Exactly, and I think that's, again, if they take the right approach and play that ball control, keep the ball out of Luck's hands, keep their defense rested, then when Luck comes in, their defense can be on its top performance, all that. The Colts are a strong team, though. They're tough to beat, but they've been beaten, and people have beaten them. So this should be a tough game for the Colts.
Yeah, I think so.
So I don't know. I'm 50-50 on this. I'll go with the Browns, I guess.
Next up, Tampa Bay Buccaneers at the Detroit Lions. I could foresee scenarios where Detroit could get caught here. Mike Evans could really blow up. Calvin still not 100% on that ankle. He missed practice day, but it's Wednesday. It's a Veterans Day off. We'll see what happens tomorrow.
I don't think Calvin's practiced on Wednesday in like 5 years.
Calvin doesn't practice on Wednesday, but I guess they were talking about the ankle for what it's worth. But again, it's okay. Wednesday. There are ways, I guess, but Tampa, I'm going to go with the Lions.
This isn't even much of a discussion for me, and this isn't nobody blame me or accuse me of just being a Lions homer here. Tampa, I've thought for a long time, is one of the worst teams in the league. They've played a little better over the last 3-4 weeks. They gave Cincy a scare last week, although Dalton was yakking the whole game and the night before and all that, but I don't think this is a very good Bucs team. I think the Lions are a much better team, and they're at home, and they have a lot to play for. I think this is a game the Lions should and will win.
Houston Texans are at the Jacksonville Jaguars. The Houston Texans basically J.J. Watt, there's a good Deadspin breakdown of it if anybody's interested in, or hasn't seen it yet, of exactly how J.J. Watt pretty much single-handedly defeated the Titans last week. Jacksonville, they're a tough team, but they're not even as good as the Titans right now. I'm going to bet on the team that has J.J. Watt. And again, you know, making Fitzpatrick the starter again, I think, was a smart move too. I like Houston here.
If Fitzpatrick looked a pretty solid last week, I think in addition to J.J. Watt, you do need to mention him. DeAndre Hopkins is turning on as of late the last
Absolutely.
Couple of weeks. So there's Texans have some things going for them, but there's, you know, outside of J.J. Watt and I don't know. I guess Clowney. I guess Cushing.
Clowney's getting a second opinion on his knee from Dr. James
Andrews.
He's not
even going to play.
He's not going to play.
I guess they still have Cushing. That defense doesn't scare me much, other than J.J. Watt.
Jonathan Joseph scares me.
I guess.
He's having a nice season.
I guess. This is where? This is in Jacksonville?
Yeah.
I'm going to go with the Jaguars again. I don't know. So I think they're going to put two together. Their defense was really fired up last week. I like Gus Bradley in this defense. I don't know. I've been bullish on the Jaguars all year too. So I certainly wouldn't be surprised. But I'm gonna go with the Jaguars in the upset.
We have four late afternoon games on Sunday, starting with Buffalo Bills at the Denver Broncos. Obviously, we've talked about Buffalo's suffocating run defense, but there's not a lot else that they're very good at on defense besides that front seven. That front seven, of course, could give Peyton Manning a few fits, but I think with this game being in Denver, it's Peyton Manning. It's hard to look at, even though the Buffalo Bills are 7-5 and, you know, Denver's 9-3 and they, you know, they're not obviously 12-0 or anything right now. There are weaknesses there. There are vulnerabilities, but I just don't see Buffalo going into Denver and winning this week.
Yeah, that's a hard one to imagine. This Bills team, again, I think that they're surprisingly one of the they're surprisingly in the mix. I thought that coming in that they'd be a strong team, but not quite as strong as they are or as we've seen so far.
Right.
But this is just far too tough a task. It's early December. You're going into Peyton's house. You know, C.J. Anderson might have a rougher day because that Bills D is pretty good against the run. But there's nothing I see says Bills in this game.
This one's pretty simple for me, even though this is going to be an interesting game. Kansas City Chiefs at the Arizona Cardinals. This is a game to me that is, to me, when I look at it, I go home field dependent. I'm going Arizona. If this was in Kansas City, I would totally be going Chiefs. So I'm going with the Cardinals because they're at home. I think this is going to be a really well-matched game, a really good game here. You know, obviously got some injuries. Don't know what's happening with Andre Ellington. Tyrann Mathieu's out for about 3 weeks with a screw in his thumb. But Kansas City, you know, they're not playing excessively well right now. They're okay. They're in the hunt. They're 7-5. But I think Arizona can do this. I mean, stop Jamaal Charles, stop everything, and I think they can do that.
Yeah, I think you hit this on the head where this would be probably a really, really good game, or that's just extremely tough to call if it were on a neutral site.
Yes.
If it's in Kansas City, you probably lean Kansas City. If it's in Arizona, you probably lean Arizona.
Yeah.
Arizona had some struggles last week, but I think I kind of like them to bounce back, and especially at home against an offense that isn't very scary by any stretch.
Seattle Seahawks at the Philadelphia Eagles.
Ooh.
You know, Seattle has—they've looked mortal this year. We went into the season saying, "How could it be possible that this team doesn't repeat to the Super Bowl? This team is so dominant." But they've looked vulnerable. They've looked human this year, and I think that we're going to see that again against the Philadelphia Eagles. I think the speed of that offense is a really good way to counteract all of that firepower that Seattle has on defense. So I really like Philadelphia in this game. To be honest, I really like them.
You really like them.
I really like them.
Yeah, this is an interesting game. I think this should be a really good game. I see this as you know, crazy key defensive plays for both teams.
Oh yeah.
Philly obviously has their offense thing going.
They've got that special teams thing going.
But it's also
too.
Led by Sanchez, and he's had his ups and downs since he's started
well,
for
yeah,
them.
Yeah, I mean he's Mark Sanchez,
and he's got to throw against that secondary in this game. I'm going to take the Seahawks. I'm not one much for taking on. I try to not pick too many road teams. but I think that this should be a super exciting game, and I think the Seahawks are going to find their way out of it.
The final late afternoon game on Sunday is the San Francisco 49ers at the Oakland Raiders. Obviously, a major rivalry. It's always kind of
Battle of the Bay.
It's a pretty dangerous situation sometimes with the fans there, so hopefully everybody stays safe. I could really see Oakland catching the Niners here. I could really see it. I really like that Derek Carr. I don't know. I say it every week. But I'm going to go with San Francisco just because they actually are the better team. And I feel like on the road against your cross-bay rivals, if you're the better team, you should be able to win this game. And they're the better team, and they should be able to win this game. And if they want to be in the playoff hunt, you got to go to Oakland and beat the Raiders, right?
Yeah, and it's you know, it's on the road, but it's not really on the road.
It's not.
Because they're
it's
all right there.
Yeah.
And, yeah, Oakland is clearly not a good team. We've seen them look okay at times, their offense certainly. But, you know, after getting decimated last week, you know,
just a destruction.
It was, and I think the Niners' defense should be just about as tough as St. Louis was last week for the Raiders. And even the marginal success we've seen out of that Oakland offense, I think it should be thwarted, if you will, by a good defense like San Francisco. So I'm going with the Niners.
Sunday night football. New England Patriots are at the San Diego Chargers. San Diego looked a lot better on offense last week, of course, against that Baltimore Ravens secondary that's one of the worst in the league, if not the worst. But it was encouraging to see Phillip Rivers not seem to have those effects of that supposed rib injury that he has. I think it's going to be a tough duty, though, even with the home field advantage. It's Patriots in prime time. And in a sense, it doesn't matter where they play. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go with New England. This is the kind of team, you know, New England's playing really well. They're 9-3. This is the kind of game you'd expect New England to handle pretty well. So I'm going to go with the Patriots.
Man, I don't know.
I mean, I get it. I get your,
don't know. Yeah, it's just, especially the way they came back last week, the Chargers, and they're going to be at home in prime time situation. They got as much to play for as anybody else that's in the hunt right now. You know, New England doesn't need this win as much as San Diego does.
That's very true. That's very true.
Given the prime time nature and the motivation and the need, I think I'm going to lean Chargers on this, but I easily could see this being, you know, Tommy doing his Sunday night thing and them, even if they're behind, him coming back and finding a way to win the game or something. I could easily see that happening, but I got to pick somebody, so I'll pick the Chargers.
Finally, we have the Atlanta Falcons on Monday night, and they are at
in Green Bay.
Green Bay.
Whew. That's just God. That's a tough trip for them.
It's just feeding a sheep to a lion or something. It's aggravating. Okay, I'll say, you know, Atlanta's
coming off one of their best performances of the season. You got to give them that.
I will give them that, but they didn't win that game because of horrible clock management and bad decisions at the end.
No, no, no. Last week.
Last week.
They beat Arizona.
I'm just thinking about.
It was one of their better. One of their better games. Julio did his thing.
Julio Jones went off.
He kind of used Patrick Peterson in that
did.
Game.
Oh, he did.
But
it's Matt Ryan outside in the cold on Monday night, out of his dome. And then you have Aaron Rodgers. I'm going with the Packers.
Yeah, I don't know. There's not a lot to say in the Falcons' favor here.
No, there really isn't.
Like
unfortunately.
I was trying.
Julio Jones is a thing.
I was trying to say that. Yeah, I was trying to say that by mentioning Julio Jones and win last week. But yeah, I believe in them less than the Saints certainly, and I don't think there's not a lot of teams that can go to Green Bay right now and win, especially on a Monday night.
Yeah,
and the Falcons are certainly not one I think could do it.
No, that would be a wild upset.
Right.
Yeah. So those are our Week 14 minute picks. Hope you enjoyed them.
Minute picks.
I picked a lot of road teams, so I'm feeling kind of stupid right
now. Yeah, whatever. You're gonna be right on some of them.
I'm always right on at least one, right? So we're gonna take a quick break here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast, and then we'll do a couple little football facts for you and send you home. So stay tuned.
All right.
Returned here at the F-Ball NFL podcast, and I'm going to read some facts from the Little Giant Book of Football Facts.
Alrighty.
This week, I have for you five Emmitt Smith tidbits. Emmitt Smith tidbits is what the top of the page says. Again, if any of these are wrong, just let us know on Twitter, and you'll be rewarded for your sleuthiness.
Shout out next week.
Emmitt Smith played college football at the University of Florida.
That's true.
Where he was an All-American running back.
I think that's true.
Probably.
I'm pretty sure it's true.
As a Dallas Cowboy, Emmitt Smith led the NFC in rushing three consecutive times from 1991 to 1993. He also led the NFC in rushing in 1995.
Okay.
But not 94. In 1995, Emmitt Smith tallied 25 touchdowns and led the NFC in scoring with 150 points.
Wow.
That's incredible because usually kickers lead conferences
right?
in scoring.
Right.
Emmitt Smith rushed for over 17,000 yards in his NFL career. And finally, Emmitt Smith retired from the NFL in February of 2005. Not February 2005, February of 2005. So those are our football facts this week, our Emmitt Smith tidbits.
Yeah.
Hope you all enjoyed that.
Those were some great tidbits, I'll tell you that. Thanks to the great, what is it called? The big...
Little Giant Book of Football Facts.
Yeah, I was going to say great big, but...
No, it's a small book. Little, like 5 inches by 4 inches.
Little Giant Football Facts with, and make sure you include the air quotes around facts.
Yes. So that wraps up the Week 14 2014 season NFL podcast, F-Ball NFL podcast episode.
Something like that.
Yes. I'm your host, Andrea Hankst, AFC North lead writer at BleacherReport.com. You can find my work. You can just Google me. You can also... download the Team Stream app, and you can find my columns there. You can also fan my Facebook writer page, facebook.com/ahankstnfl, and you can find all of my columns linked there as well. I'm also a Pro Football Focus fantasy football contributor. You can read my columns. You got to sign up for Pro Football Focus Fantasy Gold, but we're nearing the end of the season, so it's pretty heavily discounted, and then by the time the fantasy season ends, it's wide open content, no subscription required until next season, so keep that in mind. And you can also find me on Twitter at @fball_Andrea, @FBALL_Andrea.
And, of course, I'm Brian. I can be found here in the F-Ball studios producing this podcast, as well as on Twitter at BFAT65, that's @BFAT65.
So that wraps up Week 14.
Yeah.
Here at the NFL F-Ball. What is wrong with me? The F-Ball.
What's the name of our podcast?
The F-Ball NFL podcast.
All right, there it is.
So thanks, everybody, for listening. Enjoy the games, as always, and we'll be back next Wednesday to talk about, hopefully, no more quarterback controversies in Cleveland, and maybe we'll even have ourselves a guest.
And good luck to the fantasy playoff teams.
Yes, good luck, everybody who's in the fantasy playoff championships. Good luck in the playoffs this week. I hope that all of your teams find victory.
Well, some of them are going to have to lose, but...
all of you are going to find victory. If you listen to this podcast, you win.
unless you're facing each other.
Well, anyway, that wraps it up here. So enjoy the games. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.
All right, later.
Peace.